Oh, that's Rav Tov. Okay. All right. Tell us about that. Okay, so we left off yesterday. We began to analyze another dimension of Tosh Rav Peh, a very important dimension of Tosh Rav Peh, and that's the whole concept of the Rabbanans. We started out with a basic question: where did the Chacham have the authority to make new mitzvahs? They had new Yisurim for. Where does it come from? Machshem, we have 630 mitzvahs, we're doing okay. So we were talking about some of these things in the first year, but we're going to talk about different things now. Okay? So we mentioned yesterday, Machlokes the Rambam and the Ramban. The Rambam saw that all Dinim Derabanan are included in Los Sosor, that you have to listen to the Chachmei Torah, even the Gabi Derabanans. And the Ramban said, no, it's not Los Sosor. They went in the Chavim Institute, Gezeris and Siyagim, fences to protect the Torah, that I understand. That's for sure they have a right to do. Ushmarati, Mesh Mishmarati, we quoted a puzzle yesterday. So what right did the Chavim have to institute Beres Chanukah and Megillah, and what do I have to listen to them in the first place? That's the basic question that we left with. So a possible answer to this question is really a fundamental yisod, not only in terms of lamdas, in terms of understanding Tosh Rav Peh, but it's really a fundamental yisod in terms of Avodas Hashem. So I want to share this yisod with you. It appears also in Rabbi Chaim Wasserman in the second chelek, Rabbi Chaim Svarim. Rabbi Chaim develops the following yisod. At first glance, it sounds so simple. I'm going to elaborate upon it a little bit. Says Rabbi Chaim, every single human being, Jewish, non-Jewish, man, woman, and even child, has a basic obligation in this world. And the basic obligation is to do the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the basic. Sounds like a Musa Shmur. Sounds like a 745 Sikhas Musa, not a Loch Hashem. That's the basic Mechayim of each and every person, to do the Ratzon Hashem. Says Rabbi Chanan, how do you know what the Ratzon Hashem is? How do you know? I want you to Ratzon Hashem. So they lost us with Samcha. How do you know what the Ratzon Hashem is? So there are two ways to know what the Ratzon Hashem is. One is HaKadosh Baruch Hu could tell you. And the other is, you have to be smart enough. If you know HaKadosh Baruch Hu well enough, you'll figure out what he wants. I always give the following mashal, Havdol Alef Havdolos. That's Hashem, you'll all get married in a couple of years, so you'll appreciate the mashal even more. But I think even now you'll appreciate it a little bit. So when you first get married, one of the first very important things your wife is going to tell you is to take out the garbage. That's the way it goes. That's part of the job. Part of the job description. She's going to tell you throughout the garbage. Right? So the first night after Sherry Bracha, she's going to tell you throughout the garbage. Then the second night, she's going to tell you again throughout the garbage. You're going to be a nice, good husband. You're going to throw out the garbage. Yes, dear, whenever. Then after about a week, she's going to stop telling you to throw out the garbage. And you inevitably are going to forget to throw out the garbage. And what's going to happen? She's going to say, my dear husband, how come you didn't throw out the garbage? To which you are going to respond, you didn't tell me to. That's the worst response you could possibly have. So what's her response going to be? You should have figured it out on your own. After all, you know me for so long. We've been married for a total of 11 days. So you should know me well enough to know that I want you to take out the garbage. And therefore, I'm upset for not taking out the garbage. At Khan, the discussion, post-share of Ruff's and husband and wife. What's the Yisod Adover? That for the first couple of days, your wife tells you to throw out the garbage. That is the status of a tzivut. That's a command. She's telling you directly, exactly, precisely what she wants of you. Afterwards, she's leaving it up to your own understanding. Based on your knowing what makes her happy and what doesn't, you should be smart enough to figure out to throw out the garbage on your own. So if we want to give halachic terms to these two concepts, the first is a tzivut. And the second is the Ratzon. Says Rabbi Chanan, in the world of Torah, both of these things exist as well. We have an obligation to listen to the Tzivuyim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What are the Tzivuyim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? The absolute, explicit, precise commands. Tarek Mitzvah, 630 Mitzvahs given to Moshe Rabbeinu to give to Klal Yisrael. Those were the direct, exact, precise commands, Tzivuyim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with the Halacha Moshe Mesinai, with the Perushim of Kabbalah Mesinai, etc. But that's not enough. That's not all there is. There's more to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's avodah than just the tzivuyim. There's what's written between the lines, what's not written between the lines. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to do, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is expecting of us to figure out on our own. I ask you, Rabbi Yisai, how am I going to figure out what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants? How can I be so smart to figure out what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants? So who remembers my sikha that I gave? The sikha was Musar on Sunday night.
If you learn it, Yisrael, that's how you get to know Hashem.
That's right. The same way, the same lashon as the wife. Before I get married, so I probably won't know what her ratzon is. But after married for 20 years, I'll know. I know exactly what my wife wants. No question about it. I know exactly what she wants. I know what makes her happy. I know what doesn't make her happy. I'm not saying I'm such a good husband that I'm always doing the right thing. But I can tell you, I know already what makes her happy, what doesn't make her happy. So if a person knows a Kadosh Baruch Hu, so then they know what makes a Kadosh Baruch Hu happy, so to speak, and what does make Kadosh Baruch Hu happy, even though he never told you. So how do you know a Kadosh Baruch Hu? No. What did the Alexander Chassid tell me? When you know his Torah, then you know him. Says Rav Chana, the Chachamim have that deeper insight into what the Ratzon of a Kadosh Baruch Hu is, because they're the ones who are Yodei HaTorah. They're the Yodei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They know what his Ratzon is. They can figure out his Ratzon, and they can tell us what his Ratzon is as well. So says Rav Chana, the Ratzon Hashem is that we should celebrate the other Chanukah. It's not a tzivui. Kadosh Baruch Hu never was mitzvahs to do Chanukah, but the Chachamim figured out that a Kadosh Baruch Hu would want us to celebrate a nes, to commemorate a nes, to thank him. The Chachamim figured out this is the way to do it. The Chachamim figured out that Kadosh Baruch Hu wants us to recite brachas before we eat. Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't say it. It's not a tzivui. Only Birchas Hamazon is a tzivui. Only Birchas Hamazon is deraisa. But Birchas Hananin, making a motzia, eats adam etc. before we eat food. That's the Ratzon Hashem, albeit not the tzivui Hashem. Says Rabbi Chanan, you know why you have to follow it? Because it's the Ratzon Hashem. End of discussion. Give you one more mashal just to highlight this beautiful yisod of Rabbi Chanan. We just read last week Parshas Balak. Very, very strange, the beginning of the parasha. So Kadosh Baruch Hu comes to Bilam at the very beginning, first Ali in the parasha, and says, don't go curse Klal Yisrael. Lo sa'arsam ki baruchu. A few psukim later, Kadosh Baruch Hu comes to Bilam again, he says, all right, you want to go? In the kol chabo ad Hashem, kum lechitam. You can go. It's all right, you can go. So what does Bilam do? Like a good servant of Kadosh Baruch Hu, he goes. Kadosh Baruch Hu told him to go, he goes. What's the next pasuk say? Hashem karim. It's not fair. What do you think Kadosh Baruch Hu is angry? What are you angry for? He just told him to go.
Say if you wanted to go.
So what's Pshat? It says Rabbi Chanan that Bilam knew Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't want to go. It's like sometimes happens all the time with kids. It's a shame of kids. You also all the time. Your kids, they'll kvetch and kvetch and kvetch that they want something. So your father say, okay, fine, go ahead and do it. So then they do it. So then you say to them afterwards, I really didn't want you to do it. So what's the kid's next question? So why did you tell me to do it? So the answer of the parent is that you should have figured out that I don't really want you to do it. I told you to do it because you're kvetching and kvetching and kvetching. So immediately I said you could do it. Abram Zavi's chepered me. He wants all he wanted tonight after supper was a 16th chocolate bar. That's all he wanted. So I said to him, no, you can't have a chocolate bar tonight. I said, I'll get you one later tonight. You'll have it for tomorrow morning. So I go back to the bunk for the shiur. He says, Abba, where's the chocolate bar? Abram Zavi said, you can't have the chocolate bar. Abba said, you did. He said, I can't have the chocolate bar. He said, I can't have the chocolate bar. I don't want another chocolate bar. He had enough chocolate, enough chazarai already today. He doesn't need the chocolate bar. So at the end of the day, if he kvetches enough, I'm going to say, okay, fine, have the chocolate bar. Does it mean that I want him to have the chocolate bar? No. My ratzon is that he shouldn't have the chocolate bar. There's a concept called the ratzon, a concept called tzivui. So says Rabbi Chanan, this is the source for the Rabbanans. The Rabbanans are Ratzon Hashem, albeit, according to the Ramban, at least not necessarily Tzivui Hashem. According to the Rambam, they're Tzivui Hashem. Because according to the Ramban, L'Sasser transforms all the Rabbanans into the realm of Tzivui Hashem. So with the mice, when all the dust settles, Bein Lefi Rav, Bein Lefi Ramban, of course we have to listen to all the Derabbanans, we have to learn all the Derabbanans, there's no question about that, we have to observe all the Derabbanans. A lot of lumpness as to why, what the source, how do you know it? But the mice, at the end of the day, the Derabbanans become incorporated as part of the Torah Sheva Peh as well. So we now have multiple aspects of Torah Sheva Peh. We go back to our original categories. We have Halacha Moshe Mesinai, we have our Perushim Kabbalah Mesinai, we have our Derashas, and now we have our Derabbanans, and they're four very, very different areas. Sometimes you're learning sugya in the Gemara, you have to ask yourself, what is this? Is this Torah Sheva Chsav? Is this Torah Sheva Peh? Is this Halach HaMashem Sin? Is it Perah Sheva Kuv Masin? Is this the Drashas? Is it the Rabbanon? And there are going to be different aspects of different aspects of Torah Sheva.
So Rambam is the one that says Los Asar and Kuz and
Close the Rabbanon. Rabbanon says it's not a Tzivi, but it's a Ratzon. So Rabbi says, I want to spend a little bit of time, since the Rabbanon do take such a major part of our life, I want to spend just a little bit of time analyzing some aspects of Dinim Derabbanan, some important aspects of Dinim Derabbanan. We spent a lot of time speaking about changes in halacha, and we even opened up the possibility that under certain limited circumstances, especially in the realm of drushas, Beis Din does have a certain koach, does have a certain authority, and sometimes even change things if they see that in fact, that they think that in fact the later Beis Din is correct. Strangely enough, the ability to change things in halacha is more difficult for Dinim Derabanan than it is for Dinim Deraisa. You never would have thought that in a million years. You would have thought that a Din Deraisa to change, it's crazy, it's impossible. No. That's what we said on the first day. If the Beis Din of this generation thinks that the halacha is different, they have a right to pass it differently than the previous Beis Din. But in the realm of Dinim Derabanan, we have a rule. Who knows the rule? We just aren't going to get into that. Ein Beis Din Yochal Levatel Divrei, but give me the rest of it then. Divrei Beis Din Chavero Elim Ken Chgol B'Chachmu Minyan. That a later Beis Din cannot uproot a previous Beis Din's Psak unless the later Beis Din is greater than the previous Beis Din. Now that in of itself is going to put a significant damper on changes in Dinim Derabanan, because we usually assume the principle of Yerida Sadoros, that the generations are going down in terms of stature. Therefore, it's going to be kind of hard for us to find the Beis Din that's going to uproot a gzeir of a previous Beis Din. Therefore, strange as it may be, the Rabbanans, kind of once they're on the books, they're pretty much here to stay. The Rabbanans aren't going anywhere. Once they're instituted, so then they're very unlikely they're actually going to change.
Which Beis Din is greater? I can get up and say, okay, I'm
there. That's right. So the Beis Din, you're right. The Beis Din has to be intellectually honest to itself to assess that they are or are not greater than the previous Beis Din. So you're right. It's kind of a tricky question.
Does this apply here? Like now that you said that the Beis Din was a representation of the people. I mean, the greater Talmid Chacham. So if there's no longer Beis Din and regular Talmid Chacham, could they make a din?
So we mentioned yesterday that basically anything that's agreed upon by all the Chachmei Torah has the status of a Beis Din. So that would also be subject to Ein Beis Din Yochal Levatel Min Zedel. Let's say the Amorai made a Din Derabanan, so we couldn't cancel that because we're not greater than them, right? That's very good. Good. So this is an important limitation on Dinim Derabanan. However, it's not always true. Not every Din Derabanan is written in stone is going to last forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. Anyone know some examples or really some clubs or principles, some guiding principles, where sometimes even Derabanans can change? Sometimes something that existed as a Din Derabanan may fall by the wayside at a later point in history. Anyone know of some Din Derabanan that at one time existed and today exists in a very, very low level form?
Wait,
what are you saying? It's not the same.
From the personal story, which is that sometimes the Rabbanim have the power to let something go because the generation couldn't handle it.
Very good. There's a cloud, there's a rule in terms of Gezeiras and Chachamim that Ein Beis Din goes in Gezeiras Latzibur, Ella Im Kain. Beis Din is not in the business of making arbitrary gezeiros to Rabbanan that are not going to be enforced. Stamped up rules on the books. Beis Din has better things to do with their time. Beis Din's job is to institute things that are going to be enforced, that are going to be practiced, that are realistic to be practiced. If the Beis Din makes something which is too difficult for the people to observe, so such a gezeiro will potentially be removed, potentially be revoked at a later point. So that's a cloud in terms of gezeiros. Now sometimes it's hard to assess. Beis Din is supposed to act responsibly and not supposed to institute things that are going to be too difficult for people to keep. Sometimes Beis Din makes mistakes. Sometimes Beis Din thinks that the people are able to are up to it. And then after many years, they come to the realization this is ridiculous, just not happening. So therefore the halacha says, if you have such a gezeira that was made thinking that the people could keep it, and then lemaisa they don't, so you see that nobody's keeping this gezeira. It's impossible to keep. So then any lower level Beis Din can actually uproot this gezeira. Anyone have any ideas of examples of this principle?
Yeah. I'm not exactly sure about the things that, but in general, that I don't remember exactly what somebody tried to establish that man should go to the mikveh every morning.
Fantastic. That's exactly what the example I was thinking of. Who made that gezeirah? Who knows?
Ezra
himself. Okay, Ezra made a gezeirah not every morning, but every time a man becomes tummy to must carry, so he has to go to the mikveh. He's not allowed to daven, not allowed to learn, not allowed to make brachos, etc., until he goes to the mikveh. So the Gemara says that gezeirah was instituted in the days of Ezra, and it was revoked in the days of Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, Mechilas Kvoida, he was a Baal Digit HaMuchacham, he lived at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, he was a Tana, it wasn't Ezra. So how did Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira have the right to revoke the gezeirah then?
I heard a couple of answers. I think either maybe that Ezra didn't really make it. One was that like Ezra didn't really make the law to last.
Okay, possible. Let's go with Tosa's answer first. So Tosa says, you know why what's called in Halacha Takanas Ezra was revoked? Because it was a gezeira she'ein rov v'tzid b'chol ha'levah. Most people couldn't keep it. It was just too hard. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, 300 years later, realized he's going around to the people saying, no one's able to do this. It's just ridiculous. It's impossible. So therefore, he did away with the gezeira. So Tosa says to Kasha, you know, I've been vatal of previous days in gezeira unless you're called b'chol ha'levah. The answer is, if it's a gezeira she'ein rov v'tzid b'chol ha'levah, then you're allowed to revoke it. Anyone knows any other examples? Any other examples come to mind? Anyone knows what Pasakom is?
Yeah.
Bread baked by a non-Jew. The Mishnah says in the second breath of an Azar is treif. Now I'll eat it.
And the Jews
now. So come to Yerushalmi and says that today you're allowed to eat Pasakom. As long as it was baked by a professional baker, you're allowed to eat it. You know why? Why? You tell me why. Why would they make the gzera in the first place?
What's
the Pasakom? Pasakom, bread baked by a non-Jew. Why did they make a gzera? Very good. It's about too much intermingling, and i.e. Too much intermarriage. So they made a gezeirah, you shouldn't eat pasakum.
How is intermarriage?
Well, because you know somebody, once you're able to eat in somebody's house, and we already know that's already the beginning of the social relationship. So yeah, you know, the buck stops here. Once you say that you can't cross the line of eating in the non-Jew's house, and eating his bread, even if the ingredients are kosher, that'll serve as a barrier against intermarriage. So comes the Halacha and says, the Mishnah says, but you're not allowed to eat pasakum. It's treif. It's also in the Rabbanan. Comes Yerushalmi and says, well, it's not so bad, as long as a professional baker baked it, and I really give it the reason it doesn't apply, and da da. What's going on? What do you mean to do away with the Gezeirah Pasakom? What does that mean? So Tosus writes the same story, that it's a Gezeirah She'ein Rotzi B'chom La'Mabba. And most people can't eat, they can't hack it, they can't not eat bread of the non-Jews. It's ridiculous. The non-Jews were the only bakers in town. So that's tantamount telling Jews they can't eat bread at all. So therefore, the Chabim in effect revoked just about, greatly limited the Gezeirah of Pasachim, for the same reason it was a Gezeirah She'ein Rov V'tzid B'chol La'Mabah. So again, there is a concept that a Dinder Rabbanon is generally speaking instituted forever. Potentially a later Bezin couldn't revoke it, if the later Bezin is greater, or the later Bezin realizes that the situation is such that's a Gezeirah that was never really feasible in the first place. Any other times a Bezin can revoke the Gezeirah? So perhaps Bezin can revoke the Gezeirah if the Gezeirah was made with a specific reason attached to the Gezeirah itself. Sometimes the Chacham legislative things stop. They said, this is a rule and that's it. The reason is not included in the rule. And sometimes the Chacham said that we're prohibiting such and such for this and this reason. When they made the Gezeira al Hatam, they made the Gezeira, incorporated the reason into the formulation of the Gezeira, so then there are some who suggest that such a Gezeira can in fact be negated as manazeh, if the reason doesn't apply. Anyone knows an example of that? Of a gezeirah, that's fairly easy to keep. That's something different, like Pasachim or Valkyrie of Tefillah Zezra. It's fairly easy to keep, but we don't really observe it, at least in the full force, this man is there, because we assume the reason doesn't apply, and the whole reason was part of the gezeirah problem. Anyone need a dance on Shabbos? Anyone have a clap on Shabbos? Mishnah Beitza says, not a clap on Shabbos, not a dance on Shabbos. You know why? Gezeirah, that what may come to do? Who knows? May come to fix the musical instruments, right? And fixing musical instruments is a malacha makba patish. Comes to us and says, today, no one knows how to fix pianos, people don't know how to fix pianos, the piano makers don't fix pianos. So therefore, the gezeirah is unlikely, and therefore the tam doesn't apply. So the Acharonim explains, it's not enough just to say the tam doesn't apply, is that the gezeirah was made a la tam, and therefore the gezeirah doesn't apply when the tam doesn't apply.
on the Tosfos and Beis Yosef.
So we may or may not pass like the Tosfos. The post can say only the mitzvah, real tzorach, you should do that. But we try to avoid the Ezra and Shabbos also, unless we feel it's a real mokum mitzvah. Some do Shabbaton, you know, get people to give the service a little bit. So also a lot of the dance that we have is not really, it's more like yeshivish shuffle, you know, kind of walk around the beam and sing the chadol. It's not really a dance, it's kind of just a walk in rhythm or laughter.
There are also some Patrick and the Sivas that like they don't even do a lot of singing even. For that
reason, I don't know. There's no Xerigan singing. Singing less. Yeah, there's probably, you know, a little more Lithuanian or Snobbish. Okay, so we know a little bit about the Rabbanans now also. We know some of the limitations in the Rabbanans. We know some of the possible revoking of the Rabbanan. Let's just go one step further in terms of the Rabbanans. Usually, when the Chachamim make Gezeros, the Gezeros are to tell us something that was otherwise mutter, something that according to the Torah was mutter, according to the Chum is not wasa. Say for example, Minat Torah, you're allowed to carry in a certain area, but the Rabbanan, you're not allowed to carry there. But Minat Torah, you're allowed to move a pencil, you're just not allowed to write with a pencil. But the Rabbanan, you're not even allowed to move a pencil. So usually the Rabbanans are addressing something which is Minat Torah mutter, and the Chum is saying, you're not supposed to do it. What about if the Chachamim want, rather than to prohibit something which is permissible, what the other way around? What if they want to permit something which is prohibited? Can we talk about this? Again, right? Can the Chachamim oker davar min haTorah? Can the Chachamim have the right to uproot something in the Torah? To tell you that we think it's important to drive on Shabbos. Can they tell you that?
I know, I'm pretty sure they can have
Very good. So the Gemara Yevamos that Peites explains that the Chum have a right b'sheiv al tasa. Remember this? They have a right to tell you passively not to blow the shofar on Shabbos, or not to shake the lulav on Sukkos when it falls out on Shabbos. But they do not have a right to actively tell you to violate Nevera. They can't tell you to be mechal Shabbos. They can't tell you to wear shanes. Can't tell you to eat trei. One exception to that rule. Who knows the exception? Sure, but even their eyes are mutter. Anyone know the exception to the rule when the Chumim have actually the halach authority to tell you to violate what would otherwise be an issur in the Torah? Bikum ba'aseh, mamash actively violate. Anyone know? Mamash should do an avera. Okay, that's a whole complicated story, but because it's not awesome for him to do it yet. That's why, so I don't know if that's going to be a good example. It's an interesting example that you're talking about. I know what you're referring to, but yeah, I'm talking about something which is mamash and davar also. Something which is mamash and davar also for a Jew, the Beis is going to tell you, go ahead and do it. We give you the right to do it. It says the Gemara. No, that's Pikuch Lefesh, that's Kishot Mutar. Says the Gemara, Nivam Mestapetes, if it's the Tzorech HaShoah, if it's a temporary state, namely the Chum have absolutely no power to uproot a mitzvah in the Torah ever to tell you to do an Aveira permanently. They cannot be mocked the Chilul Shabbos Lagamrei. What they can do is, if they see a particular emergency type of situation that arises, and they feel that we have to do some emergency measure, that they have the koach to do. The Gemara gives the following example. You know, we know, we're learning kids in Eid Mas Zomim, so we have Lachas Makkas, and Mrs. Beis Din. Beis Din is only allowed to administer Mrs. Beis Din if the halacha says so. What if Beis Din kills someone who's not chayav Mrs. Beis Din? What do we call the Beis Din? We call them rotchim, right? We call them murderers. Right? If Beis Din kills somebody who they're not sanctioned by the Torah to murder, to kill, it's a mamish murder, it's a mamish shvikas damim. Comes the Gemara and tells us, one time, during the days of the Yevanim, when Shmir Shabbos was a very big problem, people were outright being Mechal Shabbos, there was a person who was riding his horse publicly with the Amva Eida on Shabbos, and the Chabim caught him, and you know what they did to him? They killed him. He's riding a horse in Issa D'Raisa. It's not Issa D'Raisa, but they're the Rabban, it's Mishnah Beis, it's on him, the Rabban, he's not Chayav Nisa for it. So the Beis Din wrote him. What right do the judges have to kill the person? He's not Chayav Nisa. Says the Gemara, lo b'nei shadin kach, elu b'nei shad shrich l'kach. That not that the halach is that he's chayav misa, but it was a raw shah, was a special temporary emergency measure, and an emergency measure because they felt that's the only way to uphold Shmir Shabbos in the future, that they're allowed to do. So they see there's some unbelievable tzarech hashah Itreif, they could tell you to do that, and you have to listen to them. But if they tell you permanently, okay, from now on, everyone itreif now, it's a new mitzvah, you're going to itreif, so then you're not allowed to listen to them. This halacha, that Beis Din has the koach to be an oker, a mitzvah min haTorah, letzorach shah, Beis Din Yevamos Pektes points out, is not only true vis-a-vis Beis Din, but it's true l'gabi a Navi as well. Now, we haven't spoken too much about Nevuah, because the Rambam writes in his Adomit of Perish Mishnayis that a Navi is not really part of Tosh Bapet, in the sense of that a Navi's role is to receive a Nevuah from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. A Navi's role is not to decide Tosh Bapet based on his Nevuah, but the rule that we have, who knows three words? Let's say a Navi comes and he says that I have a Nevuah that the Halacha is such and such. Well, b'shemayim, that's a Navi Sheker. He's not allowed to do that. Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't tell us halachas derech nevuah.
Can't listen to a voice from
Shemayim
that
day. Pasta.
Yeah.
Oh, so that tells us kasha. Tells us raise the question. How come we pass him based on the Basco? Isn't that a violation of lo b'shemayim? That tells us kasha. Tells us
kasha. From Shemayim.
Well, that note that came down from Shemayim, yeah, that's not passing a shayla. That's just telling us what the Shevach of a Kodesh Baruch Hu is, and how the Chum instituted it as a takana, or as a minute, whatever it is. Okay? Yeah, no, that's not really passing a shayla based on the Koch of Shemayim. So again, so a Navi has very, very little role in terms of the turning of Tosh Bapeh. You can have an individual who's both a Navi and a Chacham. Let's say Yehoshua, or Moshe was a Navi and a Chacham. Shmuel was a Navi and a Chacham. So when he received Nevuah from a Kodesh Baruch Hu, then he was acting in the role of a Navi, and he didn't present himself as a Chacham at that point. He didn't say, Kodesh Baruch Hu told me the halacha is, you're not allowed to do this in Shabbos. That's a Navi Shekia. So there's a Navi Lechud, and there's a Chacham Lechud. Rabbi writes that, in terms of Nevuah, so there were gradations of Nevi'im, there were different Nevi'im throughout the generations. Rav Ashi wasn't a Navi, he was a Talmid Chacham, wasn't a Navi. So says the Rabbi, in terms of the Koach and Nevuah, obviously Yehoshua was greater than Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi had no Nevuah at all. But in terms of the ability of Koach HaPsak, so says the Rambam, Yeshua was a Paisik, and Rav Ashi was a Paisik. Yeshua B'dayra, Rav Ashi B'dayra. Each one had the same Koach of a Paisik, with the Chacham, the same as a Paisik of today. A Paisik of today is the same Koach of Yeshua Ben Nun in his generation. The Torah is Posik, not the Torah is Navi. But even though Navi and Posik are very, very different, in terms of this particular halacha, there happens to be a similarity between them. And in both cases, both in terms of Koach and Nevuah, as well as in terms of Koach Tamid Chacham, both a Navi and a Beis Din have the ability to temporarily put on hold a halacha in the Torah, even b'kum ba'aseh. Let's say a Navi comes to you and he says, I'm telling you to do an Aveira right now. I'm telling you, I have a Nevuah from the Rebbe Shlomo to do an Aveira right now. Temporarily, I'm not being ogia darin, I'm not telling you that the mitzvah doesn't apply anymore. If the Navi tells you this mitzvah doesn't apply anymore, that's a clear sign he's a Navi Shekhar. But he says, do you know the mitzvah applies, but right now I have a direct Nevuah to violate the sister. What's the din? You're mechuyev to listen to him. You don't listen to Michael Misa B'dei Shemayim. Who knows the classic example of this, where Navi came and told the mamish to violate the Sidiraisa.
When
Eliyahu. Eliyahu Carmel, very good. What is it was there? Eliyahu came and said, if Eliyahu would have said that, no, Shchutei Chutz doesn't apply anymore. There are only 612 mitzvahs now, he would have been a Navi Shekhar, would have been a Chayav Nisa. Eliyahu Navi Chasham would never say that. What he said was, of course, Shchutei Chutz applies. And tomorrow, Navi Shekhar, the Mikdash is going to be Chayav Kares. But right now, it's Mutar because I have a Nevuah from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Right now, I'm being Eikid, Navi Min HaTorah, Ve'kun Va'aseh. So even though both the Chacham and the Navi can temporarily put on hold halacha in the Torah, there's one area of halacha that they cannot do that. Do I know? There's one area of halacha that under no circumstances can a Navi or a Chacham, anybody in the world, tell you ever to violate even once. What is that?
Avodah Zarah.
Avodah Zarah, right. Avodah Zarah is the absolute yod in the cloud. There nobody is in a shalik. No one ever could tell you there's a mitzvah of the Rabbana, there's a mitzvah of Sanavi to bow down to an idol. Forget it. That's never the Hayud Varaya. She's the Mikan. She's the Mikan. She's the Harai. We said, Beizin killed somebody, was a Chayim Nisa. Gil Harai. Gil Harai in theory also.
During the three
Avera
states,
right?
So if a Navi would come
and tell you to do that, then you would have to listen to Navi, right? Only if it is ours, except I'm not saying a Navi ever would such a thing, but I'm saying that in theory, the Navi would. You would have to listen to Navi. Okay, so I'm not saying practice, it's never going to happen in the world.
In your school, when they come, you record, like,
right. Well, Flemish, right?
So, is that a derivative?
Okay, so that was what's called a cheirem. That's like a shvua satzibur. According to many, that may be even a deraisa, because they took like a shvua, and everyone has to stay away from that. Or there's a Ramban, we end the Parshat Chukos side that has a different halacha that when the Beis did on the tzibur, the clear something to be cheirem, that takes on a whole new level, a level of deraisa. That may have been more than just the derabanan. Good, excellent. Okay. So how many chalokim, how many aspects of Torah Shabbat do we have? Everybody say Techaza for a minute. We have Halacha Moshe Mesinai, we have Perishim Makub Mesinai, we have Drashas, we have Drabanan, there's one more. One fifth area of Halacha. One fifth area of Torah Shabbat. Everyone knows it's one step below Drabanan. One notch below Drabanan. Minhagim. So a lot of Minhagim. A lot of different Minhagim. So the Rambam has a unique statement about Minhagim. Rambam says that just as lo sasim and adava sheyigidlcho eminu small, you have to listen to the Beis Din when the Beis Din tells you what Halacha Mekum Mesinai is, and you have to listen to the Beis Din when they tell you what a Perishim Mekum Mesinai is, and you have to listen to the Beis Din when they tell you what a Drush is, and you have to listen to the Beis Din when they tell you what a Rabbanan is. You have to listen to the Beis Din when they tell you what a Minhag is also. When the Chachamim institute a Minhag, when the Beis Din institute something not b'teiris mitzvah, but b'teiris Minhag, you're obligated to listen to them, and if you don't listen to them, lo sasim and adavash and yinu chayim minusmol. That's what the Rambam says. Wow, a Minhag of Beis Din. Now, let's be careful. A Minhag of Beis Din doesn't mean every Tom, Dick, and Harry Minhag that the person has. My Minhag is to whatever it is, he can brought. I mean, a Minhag of Beis Din, a Gogol, lo sasim and adavash and yinu chayim minusmol.
Is this also
Ratzon
Hashem
according to
Rambam?
According to Rambam, maybe. So let's go back to what we spoke about yesterday. Remember the Yisrael from Rechonon and from the Rav about Beis Din HaGadol doesn't only mean 71 Dayanim sitting in the Beis Hamikdash, but if you have the entire Jewish people or the Rav Chachmei HaTorah, so that is representative of Beis Din HaGadol as well. So L'chora, just as a concept of a dinder abanan or a dinder raisa, something that's agreed upon by a Beis Din HaGadol, so too there's a concept of a minhag that's instituted by Klal Yisrael. If Klal Yisrael, the Rov Chachmei HaTorah, institute a certain minhag, so that becomes lo sasur according to the Rambam, and everyone is bound by that minhag. Everyone has to keep that minhag. So the Rambam tells us that idea that minhagim that were instituted by Rav Chachmei HaTorah are actually binding l'maisa based on lo sasur, once again that only applies to things that existed prior to the Chasimus HaGemara, prior to the time when the Gemara was completed. Once the Gemara was completed, what happened was historically, we already mentioned this the other day, the Jewish community became dispersed and different communities cropped up in different parts of the world. That's when the division between Ashkenaz and Sephardim began, and that soon after the Chasimus HaGemara, a couple hundred years after the Chasimus HaGemara. And as such, says the Rambam, different communities developed their own minhagim. Now, if Rabbanim in one community decide to create a minhag, they think it's a very good idea, it's going to help the Jewish people in this community, so the members of that community have to follow that minhag, but members of other communities are not bound by that minhag. Or the descendants of that community are bound by the minhag, descendants of other communities are not bound by that minhag. Who can give me some examples? Some minhagim that cropped up after the Chasimus HaGemara that were only accepted by certain communities, not by others. Okay, so waiting 3 hours, that's an interesting one. The truth is that's really a Gemara. The Gemara says that you have to wait after eating meat before eating milk. The problem is the Gemara is unclear how long you have to wait. So there are different opinions. Some say 1 hour, 3 hours, 6 hours, different shitas. So that's not as much minhagim as different interpretations of what the Gemara says. I'm talking about things in Mamish or not in the Gemara will have zero relevance to the Gemara. Okay, so there also, those are we call them different minhagim, but those are different interpretations of what the Gemara says. The Gemara in Sefer Brachos Shabbos gives us a shir ben hashmash. It's just unclear what that shir corresponds to. I want things which have no relevance to the Gemara at all. Things that have not much started yesterday.
I'm not sure, but I know that's different as far as Ashkenaz, like eating rice on...
Very good. Perfect example. Eating kidneys on Pesach. So some communities eat kidneys, eat beans and rice, etc. on Pesach, and others don't. So the Ashkenazi communities don't, and the Sephardic communities do. Where did this minhag come from? So according to the Gemara, it's not a problem. It's with the lechatchiv, they have rice, they have cooked rice on Pesach, it's no problem. It makes up rice bread on Pesach, that's okay, because only the five species of grains, wheat, barley, oats, pulp, and rye, can come to become chametz. So rice is perfectly okay, according to the strict halacha. What happened was, in certain Ashkenazi communities, the way that they used to plant the rice next to the wheat. And there was all kind of fear that some of the rice would get mixed up with the wheat, or perhaps people will, you know, mistake that the rice flour and the wheat flour look pretty similar to one another, so if we're going to let people make bread out of rice flour and paste it, the next thing you know they can make out of wheat flour. For a variety of reasons, the Chachamim in the Ashkenazi communities, not all the Chachamim, there were some Rishonim within the Ashkenazi communities who were opposed to this minhag. For example, Rabbi Chili Paris, to figure out what city came from in Paris, so he was opposed to this, one of the Balei Antoshes, but the overwhelming majority of the Ashkenazi Rishonim accepted this custom. It's not a din, it's not a din derais, it's not a din derabanan, it wasn't instituted as a din, it was as a minhag. It was accepted in the Ashkenazi communities. The Sephardi communities, most of the Sephardi communities did not accept this. There were some, if I'm not mistaken, who may have accepted it also, but anyone know any Sephardi communities that do?
Yeah, and my friend, he's from Morocco.
So Morocco, they're right, but the Moroccans don't. But the Persians do. Persians eat rice. Moroccans don't eat rice or do eat rice? They do eat rice? There is a sect. I don't know if it's Morocco or there are some minorities. I imagine they were probably influenced by, say, some Ashkenazi counterparts over the years. But the, generally speaking, the Sephardim do eat kidneys and the Ashkenazim don't eat kidneys.
Whenever the Ashkenazim settled in wherever they lived, wouldn't they realize that it was a bad idea to come next to each other? So it's like...
Well, a lot of it wasn't the Jews. The Jews weren't doing the planting, because Jews very rarely owned too much land in the Middle Ages. The Jews was the going who were doing the planting. So the Jews really didn't have too much control over what was going on.
Isn't that...
Same deal cannot be. Yeah, those are different minhagim, right? Very good, right, right, right. Those are totally definitely different minhagim, right? Very good. Machdogi, those kinds of things, right. So the Rambam describes that a lot of different minhagim cropped up in different communities, yeah.
About tefillah.
Okay, so those are a little bit, let's put that in hold just for a minute. Let me just finish up these types of minhagim first, then we'll move on to the next course. Everyone know the other examples of things which are me'ikra din mutta, the mutta min ha'Torah, mutta min ha'Rabbanan, but in certain communities here also, particularly in Ashkenazi communities, they prohibited doing certain things. In the realm of marriage, yichud is a real din. Oh, I mean doing yichud at a wedding. Yeah, because that's okay. That's a machlok. Is how to read pshat in a gemara. So that's a different story. I don't know. It's like to do with marriage. How many people are allowed to marry at the same time? Minat Torah, one man's allowed to have more than one wife. Even with the Rabbanan, a man's allowed to have more than one wife. It was very, very rarely practiced, even from the days of the Avos, it was very, very rarely practiced. Haraya, even by the Avos themselves, Avram basically had one wife. It was only the Koshim, because of the old Balagan with Hagar, that Avram ended up marrying Hagar. And Yitzchak Lemaaseh had one wife. And Yaakov's original plans of that one wife, loving, you know, a lot of other things interceded. So, you know, we find pretty much that the days of the Tanoim, the Amoraim, I think somebody made a study, they said that of all the Amoraim, there was only one Amora apparently had more than one wife. That you don't find that was practiced on Isaac, that it may even be like a Ratzon Hashem type of thing. It's understood that the optimal marriage is one man and one woman. That's clear. But in terms of being awesome, it's not awesome. Awesome. Came the Chachmei Ashkenaz, led by who, anyone know who? Rabbeinu Gershom. I don't know who Rabbeinu Gershom was. Gershom or Hagola.
He made the thing about marrying
people. Right, but anyone know who he was? Anyone know when he lived approximately? Rabbeinu Gershom. Rabbeinu Gershom was the head of Ashkenazi Jewry two generations before Rashi. Okay, anyone know where Rashi lived? When?
Oh,
Rashi. When did Rashi live approximately? Right, somewhere around there, right. But Rashi was alive during the First Crusade. The First Crusade was 1096. Okay, so Rashi was already middle-aged by then. So he said 1040 was born, that makes sense, approximately, sounds right. Okay, so you're talking about Rashi's, Rebbe's Rebbe was Rabbeinu Gershom, so you're talking about Rashi was born, let's say, for argument's sake, in 1040. So his Rebbe's were probably born around about the year 1000, and his Rebbe's Rebbe probably about the year 950, something like that. So Rabbeinu Gershom, you're talking about towards right around, right close to the year 1000. So Rabbeinu Gershom was the authority in Germany at the time. Basically, Ashkenazi Jew was Germany at the time. The Jews had not yet spread out to other parts of Eastern Europe, Poland, and other areas. So within Ashkenazi Jewry, was pretty much situated in Germany, and it didn't really even exist in France yet. It didn't come to France a little bit later on. So Rabbi Nagashon was a leader of Ashkenazi Jewry, and he and his Beis Din instituted that one man should not marry two women. For whatever reason, whatever technical reasons right now, not important. He made a whole series of other things, you know, other people's mail, etc., those kinds of, a whole series of different gezeiros and takanas that Rabbi Nagashon made. Those takanas that he made are not binding on Sfardim. You know why they're not binding on Sfardim? Because they were never part of his community. So that's what the Rambam writes, that anything that comes from the days of Ravina and Rav Ashi or beforehand, so that's binding on all of Klal. Why? Going back to the original thing, that it was a takana that was made or a minhag that was instituted by Rav Chachmei Yisrael is binding on the entire Jewish people. Let's say you would have a Jewish community argument say that says that, listen, we never heard of Ravina and Rav Ashi. Say you have Jews in Ethiopia. We never heard of the Gemara. Doesn't matter, they're still bound by the Gemara. Because if they're part of the Jewish people, so they're bound by the Pesach of Beis Avel, they're bound by the Pesach of Rav Chachmei Torah. So it doesn't matter what they heard of the Nirvim. When they hear about them, they have to start to observe it. But they're not obligated to observe Kitniyos, they're not obligated to observe the Yisra marrying to women, because those things were never accepted by vast amounts, great percentages of Klal Yisrael. So again, so we have the concept of a minhag.
So a minhag is, so like for example, the marrying of one wife.
So it's a minig, but it's a stronger than a minig because it was added a chayram also. But a Gershom like swore that nobody would do it. So that's like a chayram at tzibah, like a shvur at tzibah, but it may take on a new nuance in Allah also.
It says in
the
verse that someone shouldn't have
30
wives.
That's a melech. Melech's not a lot of wives, but a regular person may.
Why is that different?
Because lo yasur l'ravol, the melech's heart is more important than anybody else's. The melech has too many wives, so they're going to stray him away. So there's more of a concern for a melech.
Couldn't we sort of apply the same thing from Yibam? And I think, if I remember correctly, at a certain point, Rabbanan said that Amishal shouldn't practice.
Okay, so Yibam writes
something. So you're saying, okay, so we shouldn't practice Yibam anymore because they weren't on a level that we could do it as in the spirit of the Mitzvah, and not because, okay, she's attractive.
Right.
So you're saying, okay, so if we're going to take that away, why can't you say, okay, no more than one wife because then you're just going to...
Right, okay, so the Yibam example is probably not a case of a minute. The Yibam example...
I'm not saying a case of a minute. Right. I'm just saying, right. Why couldn't you just...
Okay, so for whatever reason, the Ashkenazi Rabbanim accepted the minhag of not marrying two wives, and the Sfarim didn't think that it was necessary for whatever reason. So again, I'm just highlighting the idea, rather than focusing on the particular minhag, or particular chumrah, particular takana, focusing on the idea that after the Gemara you can have chilukim, you can have disagreements, which are unresolved disagreements, but if anything that appears in the Gemara that was agreed upon by the Chachmei Babel, Chachmei Gemara, becomes normative aloch in the sense of that it becomes accepted by all of Klal Yisrael. We drew a distinction between the Rabbanans and Minhagim. We made the Rabbanans as the fourth category of Teshuva Feh, and Minhagim is the fifth category of Teshuva Feh. Anybody know any practical differences between the Rabbanan and a Minhag? Why do you have to do both? You have to do a Rabbanan, you have to do a Minhag. So why does it matter whether we call it the Rabbanan or a Minhag? Does it really make any difference? Is there any real difference?
According to the Rambam, like you said, that it's like a derisal.
Well, the Rambam says that Minhagim also, they were instituted by Beis Din after Yom Tov. Anyone knows any practical or mice a difference? When you perform a mitzvah deraisa, what do you do before you perform a mitzvah? Set a bracha. Before you perform a mitzvah derabanan, what do you do? Before you light Neir Chanukah, before you light Neir Shabbos, before you wash the Zidayim, right? Reset a bracha. It's a funny bracha. Asher kidishanu mitzvah zivanu adik Neir Chanukah. Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't tell you to light Neir Chanukah. Who is this casual?
That's
Gemara's kasha. The Gemara that in Shabbos after Gimel is kasha. Heichan tzivanu. Where does the Torah say? So what's the answer? So the Gemara says lasasa, right? The Gemara says that since the Torah says to listen to the Chachamim, so we mainly have to. You could say Asher Kiddushan Mitzvah Zivanu. What if you would do something that's only a minig? It's not a derais and not a derabon. It's only a minig. Would you say a bracha? Anyone know an example? Says the Gemara Masechta Sukkah in the fourth parak, the taking of our ravas on Hoshana Rabbah is a machlokas in the Gemara. Is that a din derabanan or is that only a minhag? Says the Gemara, might not mean whether it's a din derabanan or it's a minhag. If it's a din derabanan, you have to make a bracha. Shek nishan mitzvahs zvan while the tilas arava or al chibud arava, whatever the nusach bracha would be. If it's only a minhag, then you don't recite a bracha because presumably you don't recite a bracha on minhagim. How do we pass him by the way? Is a rava minhag or a din? Do we recite a bracha? We don't recite a bracha.
No.
We pass it only a minute. So the simple reading of the Gemara in the fourth paragraph of Sukkah is that on things that were instituted by Taurus Minog, is no bracha recited. That's a simple pshat in the Gemara. I say it is simple because it's going to be subject to some revision. Hopefully, we'll see the next year. Hopefully, we continue in terms of analyzing the difference, trying to focus primarily what is the difference between a derabbanan and a minog.
I don't know if this could be wrong, but it sounds like in that that you're making a bracha on a lav, like on the pasur.
Unbelievable, gevald gekasha. So not only is lo sasur a lav, it's also an asay, because it says kol sheyomu luchatase. So it's a lav and an asay. We call it lo sasur because that's the pasuk in the parasha, but it really means the asay.
So
one's a lot, one's a say. Count those two misses. Yeah, I think that I'm counting those two. Okay, good.